Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you for downloading and listening to this thrice weekly podcast. I'm Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us. It's the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the Ironman World Championships on the Big Island. And we've got an incredible guest for you on the show today. She's been around the sport of triathlon for a while now. She got involved and did her first Ironman back in Canada in 1998. She subsequently qualified for Kona back then as well and raced it. She then went off and turned professional as a cyclist. She's still racing as a pro cyclist, but also races as an age grouper in triathlon circles. Talking about Liza Rakeda, and it's great to have her on the show today. Before we do that, though, don't forget, if you'd like to be in touch, you can. All you need to do is pop me an email, brad@thekonaedge.com is my email address. If there's someone you think I should chat to on this podcast, please send me an email and tell me a little bit about them, and I look forward to hearing from you. If there's something you love about the podcast, or if there's something you think we should add, be in touch. Brad@thekonaedge.com. Also, some great reviews coming through on iTunes. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I said I would read a couple of them out. So if you have left us a review or a rating on iTunes, thank you very much. It definitely helps get us in front of more people. And Team Passionfit saying a great insight into what it takes to qualify and race. The big show from athletes from normal, everyday backgrounds. If you have Kona aspirations, then definitely want to subscribe to. Also, one in from Eric saying the knowledge shared in this podcast is invaluable for anyone training for Ironman. I can see how I'll improve my times and decrease injuries if I stick to the advice given. Well done, Brad, for this. It is life-changing. Eric, thank you very much, and keep them coming. We'll read out a few more in the weeks to come. If you do have an Apple device, you have no idea how much it helps us get this podcast into more ear holes and grows our audience. So thank you very much for listening. Let's get straight into today's show. Lisa, welcome onto the Kona Edge. It's great to have you with us. You join us from the Gold Coast in Australia. It's not where you're based. You're down under for a big cycle tour that's coming up, and we'll chat about that in a moment as well. But welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Liza, you raced in Kona in 2015, and we're going to get into your journey, how it all started in triathlon. But the sport's been part of your life for a long, long time. I often chat to many age groupers, and they fairly new into the sport, but you've been around triathlon for many years.
I actually have quite a bit. I got into it just after college, around 1997.
All right, so I mean, you've seen some major changes in this. What would you say is the biggest change in triathlon since then to now?
I think the biggest change I've seen is it's not just for like those elite athletes, kind of like myself, who've been in racing and events their whole life, but really a lot of those age groupers and people out to achieve a goal and set something to sort of maybe eventually even change their life and get into. Which is really fantastic, and maybe years ago this is how marathons kind of were, just finishing the race, getting through it, and it's got such a wide outreach now.
Looking back, if I told you at the start of your career, your athletic career, you would have achieved what you've achieved to now, what would you have told me?
Oh, no way. No, absolutely not. I thought, you know, maybe do something like this once or twice.
You've basically turned it into a career for you, not so much on the triathlon side of things, but you've discovered you're a pretty good cyclist, and you've managed to make a living out of that over the years.
Yeah, in fact, what's very interesting is my husband pointed out the other day, when I turned professional in 2004, I only raced about 3 years before I actually technically retired due to health issues, and it's coming back as an older athlete that I've been in the sport almost twice as long.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, it's staying or getting to the top of any sport takes a lot of hard work, but staying there and staying there for as long as you have, that's something you must be pretty proud of.
I am pretty proud of it. You know, they say it's like an old wine gets better with age. So I like to I like to look at it as you also get so much smarter, and you learn the importance of quality in your training versus quantity.
Yeah, it's funny that's probably one of the biggest things that keep coming out of these chats that I have, particularly with age groupers, is people are stressed for time, and everyone is, and it's not just a matter of how much you do, but it's how you do it, and that's probably more important.
Right, definitely.
Lisa, when did you realize you had some athletic ability? I mean, growing up as a kid, were you fairly active and were you competitive? Were you always trying to win things? How did you go as a kid?
You know, I was fairly competitive as a kid, and I didn't always win certain events, whether it be swimming. I was actually a very good downhill ski racer, but the one thing that I found important is my parents never pushed me in any particular sport or any direction. They basically let me choose where my passion was. And again, I wasn't a fantastic swimmer when I started, but I was one of those athletes that just really was dedicated and put the time into the training.
And as far as taking cycling seriously, I mean, when did you realize you actually had some ability on the bike and this could be something serious?
I'd probably say, you know, it took me a few years to sort of get into the sport, learn about, you know, it's always a learning process with tactics and ability. And honestly, I would still say that with training and learning how I can perform the best in cycling still actually goes on nearly every race I do. But my role, you know, in the professional scene is more of a domestique. So to be honest with you, I'm the one that sort of helps those elite time trialists or those elite climbers sort of get to where they need to be in the race.
Yeah, I mean, you're the workhorse in that team, and I mean, a lot of the success of the team, and it is, I mean, we talk about team and cycling, you think it's an individual sport, but it's not. It's essentially a team sport, which I find quite funny, because there's an interesting sort of contradiction between professional cycling and being in a team, as opposed to racing Ironman, where it's you against someone else, but there's no drafting, there's no helping. Do you enjoy both aspects of it? Which do you prefer?
This is a very common question. I do enjoy both aspects. I really like the team environment in cycling. But at the same time, the going into triathlon later in my year allows me to just sort of switch gears and almost like, it's almost like cross training for, you know, the upcoming season. I can sort of control my environment, my racing, my training. And then when I come to, let's say, February or March with the team, I'm really energized and I'm ready to be around my teammates and put in the work.
How do you get that balance right? Because that's one thing as well that age groupers struggle with, particularly working a full day and then having to train. Yours is a slightly different situation because people think, oh, I'd love to be a professional athlete, but there's almost no switching off for you. It's always the sport, even though it's slightly different at cycling. How do you juggle that balance of training to be part of a professional cycling team, but then also to be a world-class age grouper qualifying for sort of chasing titles and qualifying and racing in Kona?
Yeah, even better question. That does become very important that I balance and juggle not only both those sports, but, you know, I have a coaching business that I run, and so it's very important for me to stay in touch closely with my athletes and their events and their races. And again, it's not taking me away from cycling or triathlon. That's my work as well. But I do try to take, you know, some mental time. I think when I'm out training and I just process, thinking about both my work and my training. And to be honest with you, how fortunate I am. I think I go back to 8 years ago when I was diagnosed with my arthritis, and to be able to do what I'm doing every single day, I remind myself how grateful and fortunate I am, because there's those people out there that, you know, whether they be unhealthy or unable, they can't do that.
Let's talk overcoming challenges. You mentioned that arthritis. I wanted to delve into that as well. That for someone who's fit and healthy to be sort of diagnosed with something like that must be, I don't want to use the word catastrophic, but it must be a huge thing. Tell us the story about getting diagnosed and sort of what the symptoms were and what you were thinking at the time.
So probably back in about late 2006, I noticed sort of a drop in my strength and just consistency. And I still had signed on with a team for 2007 based out of Barrie in California. And I moved there and literally every day I'd go out for my rides and we'd go up a climb. I'd start about 1 minute, feel good. And all of a sudden, it was like lactic acid just filling my muscles and I had absolutely no power, no energy. But I could always manage to hang on or position myself when the races were flat and I could draft, but I just couldn't put out any sustainable power. Over the months, I realized I'd be waking up in the middle of the night, my ankle, my wrist, some part of my body would swell up. And I just assumed I needed to ice it and I didn't really know why. And unfortunately, the worst thing is I kept racing, took a few months, finally went to the doctor. They did a blood panel and I was given the diagnosis. And this was pretty much the end of the season. And yeah, devastation. I certainly, you know, just took a step back and I thought I might not even be able to ever run 3K. I, you know, my doctor told me you'll never be participating at the elite level again. And, you know, I can keep riding my bike and doing things that feel good, but any weight type bearing exercise, probably not a good idea. So as you can imagine, being active my whole life, I was quite upset, but I didn't stop riding my bike. However, I also went and did sort of the worst thing, and that was I started working more, which created more stress. And stress definitely is a trigger of, you know, any disease that's autoimmune. So it took me years, probably 3 to 4 years, to sort of start to adjust my lifestyle so that I could get more sleep, I could improve my diet, I could continue exercising, but really monitoring how much I did and how, you know, how the symptoms were. And I also got on an anti-inflammatory type medication that helped with that as well. And when I really started to come back into the sport of cycling was through my husband and going back to Europe and seeing if I could actually race at the highest level. And, you know, I didn't have any amazing performances. I hung in there. But just the fact that I could train and race at that level to me meant I'm not done.
Bouncing back from something like that, I mean, there must have been times where you're sitting and you just despair and you think, this is it. How do you, as an athlete, bounce back? Because we all, and some are obviously bigger than others, but when you're in that moment, it feels like it's life-changing. How do you bounce back from something like that?
I think a key thing is having an emotional support system of friends and family around you. And not, to be honest with you, I did a little bit of research and then it just got me more and more depressed. So I continued to figure out what things in my life that were positive that I could continue to do. And maybe, you know, it would improve. And basically that's the case. You know, all my blood tests have improved in the last 5 years and things really obviously turned around for the better.
It's an incredible story. Let's touch on your Kona performance last year, if we can. I've mentioned that you've been around the sport for a long, long time, but I mean your first experience of Kona was back in the late 90s. You've been a few times. It's starting to become old hat, isn't it?
Somewhat. I definitely know the environment, the course, everything. Yep.
What keeps you coming back?
I think the enthusiasm of all the athletes and that you're racing basically the best of the best throughout the world. And that being on that playing field on that day, there's really nothing like it. There's nothing like hearing that cannon go off now it goes off a few times, but, and starting the day and all the work that you've done leading up to it, it's actually, when you start that race, it's a relief because you've made it to the start line. Hopefully you're healthy and you're ready to see what you can do on the day.
We all sort of remember our first Ironman and what that experience is like. I haven't been lucky enough to experience racing in Kona, but you probably remember your first experience on the Big Island. Is it still as special every time you go?
To be honest, yeah, I think it's important to remember how special it is. The first time definitely was amazing, but I've also seen the race change from 1999 to this last year. And each year, there's always something different that really inspires me.
Let's touch on this year's race. You finished second in your age group. As far as the race itself goes, would you say it was one of your better performances, or is there unfinished business on that island?
Oh, yeah. I always think I'm hard on myself. I always think I can improve. In fact, I made it through the bike okay until about mile 100, and this was the first year that I ever had some mild cramping sensations. I typically have pretty decent nutrition throughout the race, but I'm not sure if you know, this year was just a bit hotter, and I really felt that effect on the bike, and I had enough hydration, but maybe just a little bit, not enough sodium, and so I was really careful and got a bit more electrolytes and sodium in me the last 10 miles or so. And I actually sat down for longer than normal in the transition to kind of absorb that and get ready for the run. But, you know, I ran faster in my qualifying race in Cozumel in November. So I actually, you know, I know that's probably been one of my weaker areas of the three, so I really think I can improve on my run.
Lisa, it's interesting. Do you feel pressure in an Ironman event, obviously with your background being a very strong cyclist and having raced on pro teams for many years? Do you feel that pressure coming in that almost people are looking at you and expecting you to absolutely smash the bike course and having the best bike splits?
Yeah, in fact, when I came back in 2012, I had an okay bike, but nothing amazing. And my coach at the time was a little bit shocked that I didn't have this incredible bike. And, you know, I sort of had to remind him, I'm not a time trialist. That's not my specialty. But I have been able to work on it over time, and it has gotten better. And people do, you know, they think you're going to have this amazing bike. But to be honest with you, they say the full Ironman race really doesn't start until mile 80. And that is definitely, you know, if not later, a factor, because you can be a good cyclist, but if you don't fuel and use your nutrition properly, you're going to have a tough, you know, way back from the turnaround last 30 miles.
Have you got things pretty much dialed in from a training perspective and a nutrition and strategy perspective? I mean, you've been doing this for a while. Do you still try things out and test things, or are you pretty satisfied with what you do and you stick to that and see how it goes?
Oh, that's one of my favorite parts about the last 3 years since I've really come back into the sport and being a coach is I'm always training and trying a few new things, not obviously on the day of the race, but leading up to it. I really like to have the nutrition to where I look forward to eating what I have with me on the bike and the run. And my bike position might change a little bit. And the training itself, yeah, that definitely, it evolves, it changes. As not only as you age, but just sort of what your body might respond to better. Some people might respond to volume better. Some people might respond to speed work better.
Let's talk about the changes, particularly from an aging body perspective. I think that's one thing that triathletes really struggle with is they tend to get faster and faster, but then age starts catching up and the performances start slipping. How does one deal with that?
Well, you know, one of the best things that's actually free is sleep. And I am a big, big believer in getting enough recovery and sleep. not only after your sessions, but days that you have maybe off work or off training. This is an area that I find a lot of people, especially if they're, you know, working at a high level position or job, they tend to be maybe a little bit more night owls, and during the week, maybe not getting quite enough sleep. And that, to me, is, you know, if you're setting some goals up for 2016, definitely trying to increase those hours and have them be hours that you're sleeping, you know, getting into the deep REM sleep. So that's one area. Another area as well is just eating healthy and having proper nutrition. I know a number of people realize, okay, I've done a hard session, I can just go and eat whatever, but it's basically just like putting bad fuel into your car. You know, it's not going to run as well after a while.
You might be able to get away with it once or twice, but the long-term compounding effect of both that nutrition and the sleep is it can do serious damage in the long run.
Yeah, for sure.
Lisa, looking at sort of the time you spent with a pro cycling team, and often people say, oh, pro athletes have got it a lot easier than age groupers because they're essentially getting paid to rest. It's not that they're getting paid to train. Do you think that having that background, being part of the pro team, has been an advantage to you as an age group triathlete, or has it been a disadvantage?
I think it has been an advantage. The atmosphere of the teams I've been on, I've been very fortunate. It's quite positive, and you all of a sudden have people that are encouraging and happy for you when you do well. But you also have to remember, like you said, you know, just being a pro athlete, you don't necessarily, those hours, that extra time you have, there's also a very high rate of depression I know in professional cycling there is, and I'm sure a lot of other sports, but having the pressure to perform, be at your best, a lot of times really takes its toll on athletes throughout a season and multiple seasons.
It's so funny you say that, because I see that quite often with age group triathletes, particularly the younger guys and girls who perform really well in age group ranks, and they decide they're going to turn pro as triathletes, and it's almost like all of a sudden they've got all this extra time on their hands and they don't tend to perform as well. Would you sort of recommend people err on the side of caution before turning pro as a triathlete, maybe stick it out in the age group ranks, even if it's a part-time job, just to keep something outside of the sport to keep you engaged, that you're not just overthinking and overanalyzing things all the time?
Yeah, you know, and everyone's different. So in terms of their response to the lifestyle and that transition, I think if they have experience for many years as an athlete in another sport, they might be able to handle that a bit better, but I could see the transition being quite tough. I know when I got into pro cycling, I had those exact problems. Here I had all the time in the world, but I actually didn't have, you know, a lot of money. So one of the first things I did was I canceled my coach and canceled things that were actually very necessary to my health and my training and my happiness. And I find that's very important, that you've got to have that. To me, it's that work-life-family balance. You may be quite a bit busier, but you need to learn how to multitask, and that's simply what I do. I'm lucky enough I can set my own work hours, so I can work that around my training, but I don't have a lot of free time, and I really need to balance that time carefully.
Let's talk about coaching and the importance of coaching. You run a coaching business yourself, but as an athlete, I see a few athletes up to sort of age group world championship level self-coaching. Do you think it's important to have a coach, or can you wing this thing and do it on your own?
I think if you have enough experience, you can do it on your own. There are, like you said, a number of fantastic self-coached athletes. I personally don't want to be responsible for my own training. I like to hand it over.
Why is that? Can I jump in there, Lisa? Why is that?
Oh, yeah, I don't trust myself. And to be honest, that's exactly what took me out of the sport in 1999. I was training myself. I had 7 weeks between Ironman Canada, where I qualified, and Ironman Hawaii. And I was 25 at the time. I was amped up and I just thought I needed to train, you know, harder and more for the Worlds. And I had so much pain and I had no idea why I had this pain in my knee. And a year and a half, to be honest, to figure it out and finally end up getting surgery on it. And that was the best lesson for me as an athlete, that I should not be in control of my training. And since then, pretty much, I've had a coach, and I've been fortunate the last 10 years to actually have the same coach. So I find it's critical. Most athletes, you know, they know themselves better oftentimes than the coach. But if you have a long-term development relationship with your coach, I find that being, I'm even at more of an advantage because my coach knows just how to give me the right amount of training, get the best results out of me.
What should someone look for in a coach?
I think an extensive, you know, question at the beginning in terms of finding if they have the right type of relationship that's going to fit with their needs is pretty important. And I have a couple. I use Training Peaks. I'm one of their certified coaches. I'm also an Ironman University certified coach. In the beginning and setting up sort of expectations of your coach and of the athlete, they have to be pretty parallel, and it will take some time to sort of, you know, get that. It's sort of like a relationship. You know, you have to grow along with your athlete. And it's pretty exciting, you know, when you do see a lot of the breakthrough workouts and breakthrough performances.
How rewarding is that for you from a coaching perspective, seeing people sort of along that journey and seeing them start out and setting goals, whether it be to complete a sprint triathlon or an Olympic distance or possibly an Ironman or possibly qualify and race in Kona? How rewarding is that for you, seeing those dreams and sort of goals coming into fruition?
I have to say it's incredibly way more rewarding than my own racing. And that's what just motivates me literally every day to get up. It could actually, I think, factor into a lot of what helps me and my training, is I have all these athletes out there working hard, putting in the time and the swim, bike, and run. And seeing them cross the finish line or do the PRs, like, it just gives me goosebumps because I'm able to work with these people, and this sport might be changing their life.
Talking of the sport changing lives, if you weren't doing this, what do you reckon you would have been doing?
If I wasn't doing triathlon?
Yeah, if you weren't cycling and you weren't into triathlon, I mean, what do you think you'd be doing for a living?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not actually sure. I would probably still be in some form of a fitness environment. With my arthritis, it's hard to say. You know, I've been very interested in specializing in strength training, but I personally am not able to do a lot of heavy lifting, so that's kind of out of the question. But I'm sure I'd still be in some kind of environment that had to do with teaching.
As far as what you still want to achieve in the sport of triathlon, what's still on the list?
I definitely have an interest in experiencing, I'm not sure of racing, but a number of the courses around the world that are very popular, like Ironman New Zealand, Ironman Coeur d'Alene. There's some that have been around a long, long time. And I find as a coach, it's very important to have not only the training leading up to those races, but the actual course conditions and temperature and how the races play out on those specific courses.
Looking at the cycling side of things, I mean, coming up as we're recording this, you're in Australia. You're actually based in California, but you're in Australia at the moment for the 2016 Tour Down Under. Are there still things you want to achieve in professional cycling that you haven't yet achieved?
You know, I've been fortunate there where I've done nearly as many races as I'd like to do. And my goal until I finish professional cycling is actually to be helping those developing and up and coming riders gain experience and achieve, you know, wins and victories in their races. And I was fortunate enough to be here for the beginning of the year for Baycrits. Had a wonderful Criterium team that I guest rode on. And one of those riders won the Australian Criterium Championship just this last week. And to be honest, I'm not her coach. I'm just a friend and was a teammate, but she thanked me for helping her in those Criteriums, and it maybe could have helped her, you know, at some point win that race. And to me, that's just incredibly rewarding. So to continue, because the developing riders and younger riders coming into the sport, they have many years in front of them, and the knowledge of racing in the U.S. and racing in Europe for the UCI races, it takes a lot of time to really perform well at that level.
Lisa, you've also been around women's cycling for a while. I asked you earlier how the sport of triathlon has changed, but women's cycling has changed over, I don't want to say over the last decade, over the last few years. It's really starting to grow and getting the recognition it deserves.
Yeah, it's evolving tremendously, and this will be the first year in 2016 that the women have their own world tour, and the races as well in the UCI level are more organized and getting more respect and more exposure. When I did this women's tour down under in 2010, it was a number of criteriums and they were sort of off site and they weren't even actually connected with the actual, tour down under men's race. But this coming Saturday, we actually have our presentation the same night as the men's. And that is definitely a sign that things are changing for the better.
It is great news. I've got a couple of friends who race on the international circuit, and I follow women's cycling pretty closely, and it's exciting. I think it is well-deserved and about time, too. So I think it is great,
yeah.
And congratulations to you as well for the role that you've played in it. I think you've mentored a lot of young cyclists and proved that you can stick around for a while.
Yeah.
Lisa. Great. I want to thank you for your time today on the Kona Edge. I look forward to welcoming you back to chat just a little bit about the various disciplines and some of the things you've done to get better over the years and improve your performance. But we'll save that for another time. Much appreciated.
Sure. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.